Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking with a blind author that we ran into when Nancy and I were visiting out in Golden, Colorado.
Even as a child, Jo Elizabeth Pinto enjoyed writing. Now, what started as a few chapters in high school has grown into her debut novel, The Bright Side of Darkness. And we will speak with her about her experiences that led her to write the book, about a brave young blind girl and her unlikely friend, and also about her experiences in getting it published. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Jo Elizabeth Pinto.
Writing can be a lonely craft. It's like a knife and a grindstone. You really need to sharpen your skills by working with other people and getting their feedback. You know, your writing can sound like the best thing ever if you read it to yourself, but it can always get better by being read by other people and growing from their critique and their feedback.
So it's good to join a group of people and get that feedback, and you can grow as a writer and become even better.
And if you use the search field on our website and put in the word author, you'll find a number of episodes of Eyes on Success in which we talked with blind authors or people who have done some writing, and you'll be able to connect with them and get some more advice.
Let's start by meeting Jo Elizabeth.
My name is Jo Elizabeth Pinto. I live in Brighton, Colorado. It's a suburb of Denver now. I've lived here most of my life. I went to public school here. I started the year after IDEA opened the public schools.
What's IDEA?
IDEA is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. It's the law that opened public schools to disabled students.
So you were mainstreamed the whole
way? I was mainstreamed by 1 year.
Wow. Were you born blind?
I was. I was born 3 months premature, and the oxygen in the incubator saved my life and ruined my eyes.
So you have no vision at all then?
No, not anymore. I had some as a child and young adult, and then gradually lost the light perception that I had.
Mm-hmm. So later on, we're going to talk about your book and about you being an author, but what other things interest you or hobbies that you might have? What keeps you busy in Colorado?
Well, I have a almost 9-year-old daughter. Now she keeps me busy a lot of the time, but I used to like to garden and do a lot of baking. I used to read, but now I proofread Braille textbooks, mostly textbooks, also some other novels and cookbooks and things. And so I don't read for pleasure that much anymore, because by the time I get done working, my brain is full.
Do you listen to audiobooks at all?
Once in a while. Mm-hmm. If something really good catches my attention.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is Jo Elizabeth's experiences writing and publishing her first full-length novel.
So tell us how you got into writing. What started you writing?
I wanted to be an author as soon as I figured out that words could be written down. I remember my dad reading me a book, something really simple. It was about Osceola, the Seminole Indian chief. And I was really young, sitting on my parents' couch with him. And I remember being sad when the book ended. And he said, well, you don't have to be sad. We could turn it around and start at the beginning. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. I want to do that.
That's so cool.
And after that, I used to write stories on my Perkins Brailler, and my mom kept some of those. I found them in a box a few years ago when we moved, and they were silly little things, but I wanted to be a writer ever since then.
So you just published a book, and that's mostly what we'll be talking about, but is that the first thing you've had published?
Well, the first actual thing I had published was in Jack and Jill magazine, and I was maybe 11 or 12.
That's quite an accomplishment.
I remember being really excited about it. It was about running in the garden, and that was the first. But then there was a long dry spell. I haven't had much published beyond that. I had an article published in one of the NFB magazines, Future Reflections, and a few things in the church newsletters and here and there. But the book was the main thing, and that was in 2015. But Jack and Jill will always be close to my heart because I felt like I had arrived. I was published.
So we have an international audience, and just for their knowledge, Jack and Jill is a national publication that many, many, many American children subscribe to. So it really is an achievement getting something published in there.
So you said you used to write a lot when you were young. What kinds of topics did you write about?
Animals, kids going on adventures, kids and dogs. I wrote about what I knew. I had an independent study to write in the seventh grade, and I remember visiting an author on a field trip, and she said, you need to read and you need to live an active life, because when you write, you're like a mother bird, and you take a little piece of your life from here and a little piece from there, and you build a nest. You're going to give yourself away. And that is true. I gave a lot of myself away when I wrote that book, and I've just now started recovering from that and feeling like I've wanted to write again, but that's been a couple years. It was a rebuilding process. I felt depleted.
It's an effort, I would guess. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that you say to write from your experiences. I guess that makes the kind of best writing.
Right. So as a kid, I didn't have as many experiences. So I wrote about kids and animals and pets and things that I knew. I didn't have pets, but I knew other people that had pets, and I liked to visit farms and pet animals, and I was always into animals. So I wrote about that kind of thing.
The book that you recently published, can you tell everybody what it's called?
It's called The Bright Side of Darkness, and it's a book that's kind of a coming-of-age story about a group of kids from the projects and how their lives change when one of them comes upon a mentor who believes in him and shows him that he can believe in himself, and then how that ripple effect starts to change his world and the world of people he comes in contact with.
And one of the other main characters is blind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the blind character. She starts out in the beginning of the book by leaving home and going off on her own.
She does. She has some push factors that cause her to go off on her own. And she's not your Mary Ingalls type of blind person that just sits around in a rocking chair and waits for the world. So she goes off on her own and meets the main character of the book, and he feels like he needs to protect her from some of the harsher elements of the world. And then, well, first he's kind of inspired by her and sort of wowed by her take on the world attitude, and then gradually he starts to develop an interest in her. That interest grows into an inspiration that helps him change his world.
So this book talks a bit about sort of the poor kids on one side of the city and the more wealthy kids on the other side, and some of the interactions, and as you talked about, some of the ambition of this blind girl. Did this also come from some of your experiences in life?
Well, at one time, Brighton was very much like that. It's kind of spread out now and grown into a small city, but when I grew up here, it was a farming community, and it was very much divided that way. it was more racially divided, but it was definitely economically divided as well. The state highway out there split it right down the middle.
So you saw some of these interactions right. in your own town and became mm-hmm. familiar with these types of people and these type of goings-on.
Right, and as a child, and so a lot of that went into the book. And then as a young adult, I had some hard times in my life, and my husband at the time had gotten sick, and so we fell on some very hard times because it took a few years for him to be diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease.
Oh.
And so we lived in fairly extreme poverty at that time, and we lived in some neighborhoods where the police wouldn't go by necessity. Mm-hmm. And so we became the go-to adults in those neighborhoods because we weren't living crazy, and we weren't doing drugs, and we weren't working double shifts at the Scotch Tape Factory to put food on the table. So we were around, and we became the stability for a lot of kids whose parents were either doing A or doing B, and they just needed somebody in their lives.
Mm-hmm. So interesting, you being blind, I wonder, you know, many blind people might feel more vulnerable themselves or scared themselves, but it sounds like somehow you reached out and were the guidepost for other people. How did that all work out?
Well, you would think we had something to be scared or vulnerable about, but we were untouchable because he was disabled too. He was in a wheelchair by that time, and we didn't know why. And nothing was going to happen with us because those kids knew us, and we helped with homework, and I traded babysitting for food that I couldn't get because we didn't have any children, so we couldn't always go to the food banks, mm-hmm. and we baked cookies with the kids, and we gave breakfast to kids whose moms' boyfriends took them out and left the kids at home, and we played board games, and nobody was going to mess with us.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I've known some other people who grew up in tough circumstances, and they said, you know, even the toughest kids, it's not so much a quid pro quo, but if you do something nice for them, you know, helping with their homework, giving them a donut once in a while, that they'll really reach out and try to protect you against what they know are some other dangerous elements in the area.
And not just you. There are the lowest of the low everywhere that don't care, but there are certain codes. There was a blind woman I knew with a guide dog who got off the bus in the wrong place in Denver, and she was in the middle of a gang block. And some kids were giving her a hard time, and there was this one kid that came and sat with her and said, "When the next bus comes, I don't care where it's going, you're going to get on it and stay on it until it announces this certain street, and then you can do what you want, but that's what you need to do." And he had the reputation, apparently, that nobody messed with her when he was sitting with her. And she said, "Were you going somewhere?" And he said, "Well, I'm supposed to be in court right now, but..." And she said, "Well, can I write you a note or something? I wish I could do so. Can I call somebody?" And he said, "It won't matter." So there are codes. You know, there are certain things that just don't fly.
Yeah. And that sounds very much like the beginning of your book, where, you know, some people are trying to take advantage or harass this blind girl who just left home with her guide dog in the stadium, and some boy comes over and says, "Wait a minute, leave her alone, she's okay," and then starts to befriend her afterwards.
Right.
To what extent do you identify with the blind girl in your novel?
Well, I never left home or had those kind of circumstances, but, you know, there's a little bit of me in her, but I was never that in your face the way she was. Some of that was a little bit of vicarious living. I was always a lot more subdued than that. Mm-hmm. So it took me until I was an adult to grow into my voice.
I think that happens for a lot of us, right? Yeah. It's not easy.
It's not easy to be a person with a disability in this culture.
Right.
So sometimes it takes us a while to figure out who we are. And, you know, I'm more that way now than I was at her age. But she had a lot of factors that, I mean, some people have criticized that character for being the way she is at her age, but she had a lot of factors. She had lost her mother, and her father was not the most savory character in the world, and she had grown up hard, and so she probably had to be that way as a teenager, where it takes some of us more years than that to come into our own.
Mm-hmm. So you said you wrote for many years since you were young, mostly for yourself, some short stories based on your experience and all. What finally, a few years ago, started you off on writing this novel and stepping into this big venture?
Well, I started that novel as a project in a high school English class.
Oh, so this has been festering for a long time in your head.
Yes, it has. And those characters just came into my mind, sitting on that bench in the baseball stadium. And I wrote the first part of it, the first six chapters or so, and turned it in and got an A and put it away. But I didn't ever get rid of it because I still had them in my head, and I couldn't quite forget them.
But somehow you decided to resolve it and actually extend it into a full
length novel. Well, what happened was I put it away, and then in the 90s sometime, I got a computer, somebody's old computer, and I wanted to learn how to use the word processor, and I needed a big chunk of text, something to practice on, because I got tired.
So you figured 300 pages would do the trick?
Well, no, I had the first six chapters or so, and I typed it in there, and it was pretty bad. Actually, the writing was, it was okay for a high school senior or junior or whatever I was. And then I started moving things around and deleting and adding and cutting and pasting and doing all the things that you learn on a word processor. And then it got better, and it was intriguing. And I showed it to my husband at the time, and he said, "You can't leave those guys like that." What happens to them? And so I thought, well, I don't know, what if? What if someone took a chance on one of them? What would happen if somebody stepped out of the ordinary, oh, these kids won't amount to anything? You know, where could it go if somebody believed?
Interesting. Sort of like you did in your neighborhood.
Right, right. Well, I think about those kids every day. I pray for some of those kids who are now adults. And I don't know what happened to any of them.
So you finally finished the book after many years.
After many years. Well, I picked it up and put it down, and life came and went, and you know how things go. You know, you'd work on it a while, and then something would come up. And then what happened is my mom died very suddenly in 2014. And I got this jolt that said, you know, we don't know how long we're here. So if I'm going to do something, I need to do it.
Naturally, after Jo Elizabeth finished writing the book, she wanted to publish it.
So I had a friend who had self-published a couple of books on Amazon, and I said, I need to do this. So she got me through the self-publishing process, and I had a Kindle book and a paperback, and then I went through the audio process to get a book on Audible, because it was very important to me to get a book that blind people could listen to.
Did you have to arrange for the narrator?
Yes, I auditioned narrators and chose one, and then we went through the process of him reading and then me proofreading and making notes of what I wanted him to fix and then him rereading, and it was a lot of fun.
Getting your own book published is thought to be a very difficult process, and even self-publishing, my impression is, it's pretty difficult. Can you give us an overview of the process and how difficult it is?
Well, I went the regular route of trying to get my book published for a long time, and that was a difficult process on my book because it doesn't fit neatly into a genre. It doesn't fit into one of their little boxes.
Right, and it's certainly not mainstream.
No, it's sort of its own thing, and that's not easy for a traditional publisher. And so I got a lot of, hey, we really like this, but we don't know how to categorize it.
So what happened after that?
eventually I decided to self-publish it because they said, well, even if we publish this, we wouldn't know how to market it.
And how does self-publishing work? So you wrote the book up yourself in the computer, and
then
what do you do next?
You go to CreateSpace, which is on Amazon, and you decide where to put the book in their categories. And then you make sure all the formatting and the proofreading and all that is done to your satisfaction. And yes, I did find one mistake in it after I published it, which drove me crazy, but I'm a bit of a perfectionist, but I was told that it always happens. And then they send you a proof after you do all that stuff with the formatting. And the first proof I didn't like, so then I changed some things and then got another proof, which was a lot better. And then when you're happy with the proof, then you just price it. Amazon lets you price it. They have restrictions of where you can put the price because it's print on demand. Mm-hmm. So they have to make their money, and then whatever you want to make after that, they recommend where to price it. And then you hit the publish button, and then the way it works is when someone orders it, Amazon will print it to
them.
A single copy at a time. Yeah. So you don't have to have a garage full of books, which is the way you used to have to do it. You used to have to order 500 or 1,000 copies, and that made it expensive. But now that they can print a single copy, it's within anybody's budget to be able to do it, which is the upside and the downside, because anybody can print anything. So now the market is flooded with books, and that's why it's harder to get publish-on-demand material into libraries and schools, and you have to really go out and prove yourself.
Did you have to worry about things like the cover design and artwork and all
I
before
did.
Publishing this book?
Gerald knew somebody that he went to high school with that has a studio. So we got the cover design done. But you can also, if you don't know anybody and you don't want to do it, you can get stock pictures off the internet. Some are paid for and some are in the public domain. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to know someone who could draw one that's an individually designed cover.
Can you describe the cover and how it relates to the book?
The cover shows a man in a jail cell, so he's at the bottom of where he goes, but there is a dandelion lying at the floor with a shaft of light, and the dandelion is a symbol of hope in the book, and the shaft of light catches it, and so it shows the positivity and sort of the way through the darkness to the positive side of life and the way out and the way up, the way through.
The bright side of darkness.
Mm-hmm. And it goes to the title, The Bright Side of Darkness.
Now for this week's final item, how you can get the book in various formats, and how you can connect with the author.
Maybe you can remind our listeners about the title of the book and where they might be able to obtain it.
The title of the book is The Bright Side of Darkness. It's available on Amazon.com. The author is J.E. Pinto.
You said it's also available as a Kindle book and on Audible. So
it's on audible.com. You can go there, but it's linked there on the Amazon page. It's also linked on the Kindle page.
And if people had more questions for you and they wanted to contact you about just to connect and or to ask about the publishing process, would they be able to do that somehow?
You can connect through the author page on Amazon. There's a contact button.
Do you have a social media presence?
I do. I have a Facebook page at J.E.Pinto or author J.E. Pinto, all one word. I also write for the Blind Motherhood blog, which is on the American Council for the Blind website.
In case you need more motivation to get and read Jo Elizabeth's book, here's a list of some of the awards that the book has won.
Well, that book won the Next Generation Indie Book Awards for 2016. It won first place in inspirational fiction and contemporary fiction, and it won SIPA Awards in inspirational fiction and contemporary fiction. So,
best first novel.
And best first novel under 80,000 words, over 80,000 words. And it won a second place award in audio production.
And as usual, all of that contact information and those resources can be found in our show notes for this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1716. Next week on Eyes on Success, for the very first time ever, we will be doing an encore presentation. If you remember that trip to Colorado we took where we met Jo Elizabeth Pinto, well, it was so wonderful. We're moving to Colorado. But don't worry. Eyes on Success does not depend upon where we are. It's just for the next couple of months, we're going to be extremely busy, and we will be inserting a handful of encore presentations so that we don't completely overwhelm ourselves or have to skip a week. So this is the first one of those, and we will make sure to highlight topics that are timeless and that some of our newer listeners may not have heard yet. So next week on Eyes on Success, we will be reprising episode number 1308 about progress in speech synthesis. Much adaptive technology relies on speech synthesis, which has evolved from humble beginnings to nearly human-sounding speech. We will speak with Andrew Breen, Director of Innovation for Text-to-Speech at Nuance Communications, about the history, current technology, and future goals of speech synthesis. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.